The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
On this episode of Revelator, I welcome music guest Sick Puppies. I also cover music news, the top movies at the box office, NBA All-Star Weekend, pork pies, and dumb crimes. All this and more here on Revelator. Welcome to Revelator. I'm your host, Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me. We've got a really awesome show for you. The band Sick Puppies will be joining us, so definitely stick around for that. Also going to hear some cuts off their album, Connect, as well. They're currently on tour, the Revolver Tour, featuring Lacuna Coil, also one of our past guests, Silver. So definitely want to stick around for that. Shim from the Sick Puppies will be stopping by. Really cool dude. And also some really good tunes off that album, Connect, as well. And a lot of other really things, you know, we're going to get into some really interesting dumb crimes. You know, I love those things. We're talking about All-Star Weekend. We're going to do our version of the Olympic update, which I think you'll find very entertaining as well. And I also want to talk about this. Now, there's been a lot of, you know, winter has been, seems like it's been dragging on forever this year. Lots of snowstorms all over the place. And most everyone knows I live in the South. And I'm not from the South, just live here, which is, you know, it has its up and downs like anywhere else, but. When Atlanta and Alabama, these places get these crazy snowstorms, they close school, you know, here in Tennessee, they close school a day ahead of time, you know, even though it's 40 degrees outside. They're like, oh, it's supposed to snow tomorrow? You mean tomorrow it might snow? You're telling me it may get cold enough to actually snow? Yes. Well, we must close schools. Schools are closed. Kids stay home. It ends up being like, you know, mid 30s and rain. They're like, oh, no, we're not close. We already closed school, so we might as well keep them closed. No school. It's unbelievable. So, like, when they had these snowstorms down here in Alabama and Atlanta and some of these areas, I understand, you know, some of these cities are not equipped for these things, but people act like crazy down here. It's absolutely insane. Now, this is my interpretation of someone from the South and how they treat the storm, okay? And this is my.
Delivering the goods at every frickin' turn.
Well, the white devil was coming. They said it was gonna snow. It was gonna come down. So what I did is I went on to the Kroger. I got my bread and my milk and my eggs, because these are things that will help you survive a snowstorm. Okay? It was the Great Blizzard of 14. The white devil was coming, they said. And it came. And it stayed around for almost a whole day. 24 hours of white devil. It's like the North breathed out and the white powder fell everywhere. Now, luckily I got home from Kroger. Now, I'm afraid, I mean, it's cold. What if the power would go out? What was I to do? How would I keep my milk cold? That's my interpretation of someone from the South there talking about the Great Blizzard of 14. The Great Blizzard of 14 came and dumped snow on us. How dare that white devil. Yeah, you know what? And living in the South is kind of one of those things where, you know, they always talk about the hospitality and stuff, and I haven't found it, not a whole lot of it anyway. But I'll just be honest. like, there's not a whole lot of it around here. The people were like, well, you're not far south enough. I'm like, really? Oh, okay. But all right. Well, I ain't going any further, you know? But, like, it's I always, you know, in like, and I hear people, like, whine and cry, like, oh, it's so awful. I mean, it's cold and it's raining and snowing, you know? And, you know, it's just that whiny, like, accent that really just drives at me, you know? And there's a lot of people that I've met in the South that are really cool. And I don't want to diss everybody. I'm talking about a small percentage, obviously. Maybe not that small, but, but it makes me wonder, like, I think the South started the wussification of America. I mean, they just whine about the cold and the snow for 24 hours. Not even. Oh, the white devil's coming for a whole day? Oh, man. You know? But anyway, moving on. You know how I love wedding. You know I love wedding fights. We've done some wedding fight stories. And this one, there's not a whole lot of details about it, but I just like the fact that it's over a pork pie. Okay. I mean, I've never had a pork pie. I don't necessarily want to try a pork pie. This is from the police report in West Yorkshire, England. This is at a country club around 7:20 in the p.m. obviously at the reception hall there, where a fight had broke out. I guess that's kind of when you know what it's real, right? You know, if you have a fight at your wedding, you know it's meant to be. Isn't that how it goes? I mean, maybe they, you know, not everybody probably has all their teeth and stuff, you know, and that's fine. But that's how you know it's meant to be, right? You're fighting over pork pie at a wedding reception. That's serious, man. They had to close down property, according to this report here, at the Herald Club, the Herald Country Club. They had to close down the property to prevent further problems from escalating. Two people were arrested on assault charges. Another person was arrested for public order matter. I'm not sure what public order matter is. I don't know if they exposed themselves to the pork pie or not. I don't know how that works there. But pork pie fighting at weddings, I didn't get much better than that. There's some other articles I came across I thought you would find interesting, at least as much as I did. Man eats four Chipotle burritos in 3 minutes. You know, just hearing that again and reading it, I think I just crapped myself. Seriously. I mean, you know, sometimes, I mean, Chipotle is okay, but I don't want to eat four of them in 3 minutes. Can you imagine? That guy's still in the toilet right now. There's no doubt in my mind. You know, I don't know. I wonder if you got the spicy salsa on those, you know? That's the real testament right there. You want to be a competitive eater? Put some spicy salsa on that and eat four of those bad boys in 3 minutes. Let me know how you feel the next day. In a completely unrelated story, a burglar caught his pants on something and got caught. I don't know. That's as far as I read. I was like, that's got to be the... They're like, we need to put something in this article right here. How about this one? I had the headline moved along. Let's take a look at some dumb crimes. This is a good one. I love this one. Oh, this guy, man. Andrew Trevor, 20 years old, works at Radio Shack. This is from Clearwater, Florida. We've had some really good ones from Florida. This is definitely a good one. Now, Andrew tries to rob a Radio Shack. He's got a ski mask on, and he sprays one of the employees with pepper spray. He tries to use a stun gun, but he ends up shooting himself in the hand with the stun gun, right? Now, here's the catch of all this. Andrew works at the Radio Shack, okay? So he tries to rob the place. I love the fact that he's willing to spray one of his fellow employees, who is a female, by the way, with pepper spray, and also use a stun gun on her, but he didn't want to use his voice. She said he thought it was, the woman says she thought it was weird when the person trying to rob the place didn't say anything. Turns out Andrew is a distinct body frame as well, and obviously a distinct voice. He's 6'2", 280 pounds. So, like, he couldn't disguise his voice like Bane or something. Like, hey, Lisa, I'm here to rob the Radio Shack. Give me an iPod and some money, please. You know, like, he couldn't do that. And then the guy shows up 6 hours later for a shift to relieve the employee he sprayed with pepper spray. And then she put two and two together, of course. And he ends up arrested. He ends up confessing it. And they search his car, and he's still got the pepper spray and the stun gun in his car. Oh, my goodness. Andrew Trevor. Nice work, buddy. He's facing some jail time for attempted robbery and $150,000 bail. Oh, my. He was definitely willing. He was like, yeah. He's like, you know what, Lisa, whatever the girl's name is, working at Radio Shack. He's like, I like working with you. He's like, but, you know, I need money to pay my cell phone bill or whatever it is he needs money for, you know, because Radio Shack isn't paying me enough. So I will spray you with pepper spray if I have to. Oh, man, that's classic. Now, here's a good one. You know, the economy's tough, and, you know, people are out there, you're looking for jobs. I think everybody's been in that situation at least once or twice in their life, and they're out there trying to find some work to provide for their family and, you know, provide a livelihood, you know. But this guy, taking it a little far here from not getting jobs, 58-year-old from St. Louis, decided that his prospective employers who were not hiring him were going to get literally a crappy deal. He was sending him cat poop, basically. He was sending people who turned him down for jobs cat poop. This is reported by the Associated Press. Now, the U.S. attorney says this is not a victimless crime because cat poop is also not it's affecting businesses and people handling it and that type of thing as well. This guy is facing some very, very serious charges. It looks like he's going to end up with 2 years probation. I guess they realize they can't, I don't know what the charge is for mailing cat poop, you know, and not disclosing, you know, its contents. I don't know. It doesn't say the businesses that he mailed them to. I would be curious to find out what companies turned down this particular gentleman, Javon Brown. It'd be interesting to see who turned down Javon Brown for a job and who got a nice order of cat shit. You know, you're not going to hire me, huh? Well, here's a nice, hey, if it fits, it ships, right? I mean, you know, I wonder how many cats he had to get. You know, if he's got like, you know, a couple of cats, he's cranking them out. You know, he's like, man, you know. 20 packages. This guy got turned down from 20 jobs, man. So he's out there. He's trying his best. And, you know, just like, you know what? I'm done. You guys are getting cat shit in the mail. You know, that's dedication right there. Not only continuing to go out and look for jobs, but also, you know, most people will send a follow-up letter. You know, Mr. Brown is sending you cat shit. That follow-up letter just doesn't quite do it anymore, you know? Thanks for the opportunity. Here's some cat shit. There's another good one. This takes place at a Giant Eagle in Brunswick, Ohio. Francis, 44 years old, allegedly chucked a pair of fillets at a grocery store employee. This is reported by The Smoking Gun. This again takes place early February in Brunswick, Ohio, at a Giant Eagle. This is where all the happenings are in Northeast Ohio there, the Giant Eagle. You don't know what's going to happen in a Giant Eagle, depending on what side of town you're on. But the 64-year-old man said that he, you know, the guy, this is the guy working the meat counter, said Francis threw the meat at him, hitting him in the eye. When I first read this, I thought about that part of Napoleon Dynamite where Uncle Rico throws the steak and hits Napoleon on the bike, and his brother's like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. All right, maybe I'm the only one that thought that was funny. But, I guess that this guy accordingly made a derogatory comment about Francis's fat husband, and maybe he shouldn't be eating steak, and she got mad and threw the steak at him. Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny. This is another one from Florida here. This is another couple. This is actually a pre-wedding. This is a couple was actually engaged to be married, and we're supposed to get married on Valentine's Day, according to this. This took place originally February 7th. The Florida woman is behind bars currently after stabbing her fiancé in the stomach because he wouldn't drive her to the liquor store. I mean, I don't know what you can really say about that one. I mean, that's a sad, sad state of affairs right there. He said the reason he didn't drive to the liquor store is because he was too intoxicated. So he is a responsible man. You know, he's like, hey, listen, I'm too drunk to drive to the liquor store. So the woman gets mad and says what the man called a big knife, and stabs him in the stomach. Can't, you know, and obviously there was a 911 call there. I wasn't able to attend the tape, or we'd be playing it, because I'm sure it's has its funny moments. But here's the sad part of this story. But not for Henry, of course. He's the one that got stabbed in the stomach. But I can just imagine her in the background, like, I want some wild turkey. I told you I want some Goldschlager, you know? You know, give me some Maker's Mark, you freaking lazy bum. I don't care if you're too drunk to drive. That Goldschlager's got gold in it. And don't you know that Cash for Gold's going 2-for-1 this week? Anyway, just, you know, I don't know. I would assume that the wedding plans are off. I don't think they're going to get married, you know, unless Henry's, you know, run, Henry, run. don't marry that crazy broad. If she's going to, her name is Melissa Bopp, by the way. She's 36. So if anyone meets a Melissa Bopp is listening in Florida, steer clear or just take her ass to the liquor store and get her some Goldschlager. Here's another interesting one. This one, I'm just going to title Ribs. This guy named, I'll just call him Mr. Liggins, 35 years old, is accused of throwing 15 to 20 frozen pork ribs at passing motorists in Wisconsin. Like, I mean, just random. He said he was throwing meat out of his car on a Monday evening at people driving by. And he actually ended up escaping the scene. Police followed him, and they found a bag of frozen ribs in his front lawn. Liggins said he was he thought it was hilarious and went hog wild and just couldn't help himself but throwing ribs at people. I don't know. It's just random, just stupid. You know what? Why? Yeah, just basically said he faces possible jail time and a fine up to $1,000. I don't know. You know, you imagine going to jail and be like, "What are you in for?" And be like, "Ribs, man." You know, they'd be like, "McRib? No, no, man. I was throwing full racks. I'm a full rack rib thrower here." I imagine a good lawyer will get him out of this, but just unbelievable stuff. Let's switch on over to music news here. Queens of Stone Age frontman Josh Homme, you know, obviously, you know, wounds cut deep here. Obviously, the Grammys from not too long ago, and I personally agree with him. I don't know how Queens of Stone Age did not win best rock performance. You know, obviously, Imagine Dragons won this year, which I don't agree with. I think the Queens of Stone Age album was absolutely fantastic, but let's hear what Josh has to say about it.
Next song is by Imagine Dragons.
Oh! Oh!
Radio! Wait, you gotta admit you're all imagining dragons right now. Aren't you?
Radio
Active, baby! You know, fuck everything. Fuck the man. Fuck Imagine Dragons. Fuck the Grammys.
I nothing more to add there. I after their performance got cut off, and obviously, I felt that Queens of Stone Age album, like Clockwork, is a fantastic album and deserved to win. But I don't make those decisions, so that's the way it is, and that's how he feels about it. And I don't necessarily have a problem with that at all. A lot of people made a big deal of it. And it seems like every year there's something like that in the rock and heavy metal world. It helped the fact that they didn't even mention Jeff Hanneman of Slayer during the Grammys about his passing. There's another one for you. A guy who actually has Grammys, who's part of the association in that community, and then not even mention him. So, I mean, the list goes on there every year. There's always something. But I think this year, definitely, more than most, a little bit kind of a dig by the board at the Grammys this year, definitely. A sad story. The 80s band Devo recently lost one of their founding guitar players, Bob Casale. He was a member of the band, best known in his period, obviously, in the 80s. He was 61 years old. He died very, very suddenly. He was also known as Bob 2, while singer Mark was known as Bob 1. And he initially joined the band in 1973 and rejoined them to serve as a multi-instrumentalist in their on their string album, their career-making albums in the late 70s and 80s, including Whip It, obviously featuring Freedom of Choice. He also produced 1981's The New Romantics and played on Devo's 2010 reunion album, Something for Everybody. He died suddenly to heart failure at the age of 61. This is interesting, and Mike, I think you'll enjoy this one as well. Fiona Apple in the news. She's going to be taking on a TV role in a French TV series. She's going to be known as Tico Apple. It's a fictional superhero show called H-Man, created by director Joseph Cahill. She will be making her debut in March on the sixth episode of the TV show, which I guess would air on French TV. I'm sure you could probably find it online as well, or maybe Netflix or something. Again, it's called H-Man. According to Fiona Apple, she's very excited about it, and just the series is basically based on delusions influenced by many American blockbusters. There you go. Our friend Brian Fair from Shadows Fall has a new project coming out. It's called Downpour. And I'll talk to Brian, and when the time is right, Brian will be back on the show to talk about Shadows Fall and also to talk about the new project Downpour as well. You can follow Brian and the new project at Downpour Metal as well. So stay tuned for that. Looks like it's going to be coming out sometime summer of 2014. Chad Smith, drummer from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, obviously they just recently played the Super Bowl here earlier this month, auctioned off his drums for Make-A-Wish Foundation and raised over $24,000 auctioning off the drums. So well done by Chad Smith. And this one I find hilarious. Miley Cyrus, her Bangers tour is getting all kinds of basically hate mail and feedback from parents taking their kids to see her. Saying that I am unwilling to subject my 9-year-old to a porn show. Well, first off, if you're taking your 9-year-old to see Miley Cyrus, you are way out of touch. Okay. Or you just haven't been paying attention. This is not the same with Miley Cyrus you knew 5 years ago or whatever the, you know, however long it's been now. I guess, you know, she's been mocking, simulated sex with a Bill Clinton, doll on stage and twerking, straddling Bill Clinton, performing oral sex on Bill Clinton, with a stuffed tongue in her mouth. She's been straddling a flying hot dog, amongst other different things as well. Her man, you know, they talking Interscope, has been pushed by a lot of people to actually pull the plug on the tour. Obviously, they're not going to do that because people are still buying the tickets or making a ton. Look, I'll say this. I'm indifferent, honestly, on the whole Miley Cyrus thing. I mean, if chicks, I'm old, okay? Let's face it, I'm old. I remember when twerking was just called shaking your ass, okay? That's basically where I'm coming from here. Twerking, whatever you want to call it, and shake your ass. And hey, man, Miley Cyrus, that girl is obviously working out. She looks pretty good. But, I will say this. If you want to, no one's forcing you to buy tickets to the goddamn show. Jesus Christ, people. I mean, come on. It's enough's enough. I don't want to take my 9-year old. How do I take my 9-year old to a concert? Well, how about this? How about you find something a little bit more suitable for your 9-year old to listen to? How about that? How about you be a responsible parent? Let's start there. Okay. Don't call Interscope and complain about it. Okay. How am I going to take my family to see a show? Take them to the circus or something then. Okay. You don't have to buy tickets to freaking go see Miley Cyrus. You bought the tickets. Pay attention to what's going on around you. That's my piece there on that. Moving on, let's take a look at the top movies at the box office. Starting with number 10, working our way up to number 1. Number 10, Labor Day at $3.1 million. Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit, $3.5. The Nut Job, which I guess you would have to be a nut job to take your 9-year-old to a porn show, $3.7 million. Vampire Academy, $3.9. That awkward moment when you take your 9-year-old to a porn show, 5.2. Lone Survivor, 5.5. The movie Frozen, which is fantastic. How about you take your kid to see Frozen? Great film. Has made $368 million and still in the top 5 of the box office after 12 weeks. Unbelievable. Number 3, Ride Along at $9.5 million. The Monuments Men at $22 million, and of course the Lego Movie, which I definitely want to go see, opens up at $69 million since opening weekend, and it's getting great reviews as well. Shim from Sick Puppies will be joining us in just a moment. Let's tell you what, let's take a listen right now. This is the latest single off the album Connect by Sick Puppies. It's Gunfight here on Revelator.
Try to blame Obama, but you should've fucking learned from your daddy or your mama. Now you don't bring the knife.
Well, I'm joined now by Shim from the band Sick Puppies. Hey, man, again, thanks for your time, and how the heck are you, man?
No worries, man. No problem at all. Thanks for letting people know about the band.
Hey, that's what we're all about here, man. And you guys have been at it for a little while and, you know, had the new album come out, I guess. Gosh, the new album is, you know, came out last June 2013. I'd like to definitely get into that album, but you guys are preparing for a really big tour coming up, the Revolver Hottest Women of Rock Tour with Lacuna Coil, another past guest of ours, Silver, and I Set to Kill. How familiar are you with those bands and members of those bands?
Well, obviously I know of Lacuna Coil. I don't really know anyone else. I don't really know the guys in the band, but I'm looking forward again to know them. And I think it's really going to be a fun tour because there's, when Sick Puppies goes on tour, if we're with, we've toured with bands and girls before, but when you're on a tour with a bunch of guys, it can get a little bit crazy. And I think that having a girl around or many girls around that are in the working aspect, not like the fangirls, but the working women, right, can really sort of just make it a much more sort of leveled playing field. And it basically keeps the guys in check. I mean, you know, the guys have to mind their fucking manners a little bit. You know what I mean?
Right. So I'm really looking
forward to the tour because of that. I mean, I don't know how crazy some of these girls can be. Maybe they're as hardcore as their bands present them to be, but I know that behind closed doors, once you get off stage and stuff, usually you just want to have a drink and chill and chat and do your thing, you know?
Yeah, well, I can speak. I've actually interviewed Yulana from Silver, and she's a really laid-back young lady, and the guys in the band also are really cool dudes, and I know they worked with Bumblefoot from Guns N' Roses on a couple tracks for their new album and stuff, so they seem like really good people, so I think you guys are going to get along just fine, man, on the road.
I think we'll be fine, man. I'm looking forward to it. I think everyone is.
Yeah, definitely, man. I think I'm actually going to be able to make the show in Kentucky. I'm actually in Nashville, so I think I'm going to make the trek up here in a couple weeks. Hopefully I get a chance to meet you guys. But what is Emma's take on the whole Hottest Women of Rock label? Does she kind of embrace that label a little bit, or is she just kind of like, you know, it is what it is kind of thing?
You know what I think you should do, man? I think you should come to the show that you were talking about with a mobile recording device and actually ask her that. Because I never really ask her, and I don't really... We pretty much just do our job. Like, if I was right. If I got the hottest guy in something, I wouldn't expect Emma to go, how does that make you feel? So I never really ask her how it makes her feel. Like, I just figure, right, you know, hey, great, we got another tour, and people still want to see our band. Awesome. But maybe you should come and ask her, because she'd probably have a lot to say about it. But I honestly, anything that I might say on the subject would be very misinformed.
Fair enough. Okay, well, we'll just go ahead and move on from that, and hopefully I get a chance to ask her that here in a couple weeks. But is there any expectations you have as far as like doing live sets or collaborations with Lacuna Coil or any of the other bands? Have you guys had a chance to work that out, or is it something that maybe just kind of happens naturally on a show where, hey, why don't you guys come you know, do a guest spot during one of our songs?
That's a really good idea. You know what I think? You know what I just realized? I haven't really thought about it. We've just been like rehearsing our set. But I think, actually, it would be really interesting if all the girls got up and made, like, a band, like, did a song at the end of the show or, like, right before we went up, all the girls, like, they formed their own band and did, like, a song by some, like, I don't know, a whole song or something like that. Like, it'd be kind of interesting. Maybe. Otherwise, I mean, we always try to throw a cover in our set. Maybe they could come up and we'd do a cover song. But I never really thought about it, but it's a great idea. I'm sure the crowd would dig it.
Yeah, I think so too, man. That have all the ladies on stage do, you know, some nice harmonies, and obviously all of them are very talented vocalists too. So obviously, as a vocalist, you can attest to that. But moving on to the tour, you know, obviously with the new record and having past albums, have you noticed that, you know, is it a little intimidating to present newer songs to crowds? And also set list wise, do you guys take turns making set list, or is it kind of a collaborative effort with you guys?
Well, in terms of the new songs, we've rehearsed pretty heavily before we go out on tour, and plus we toured for the last 6 months when the record was released, so we're pretty well-oiled at this point. And plus we've been in the band now for a long time, so we just sort of do what we do, and it kind of works out. But in terms of the set, man, we don't write the set. Basically, the fans write the set. Whatever they respond to is what gets in the set. We try to give it a flow so that you start with a certain song and you take them on a ride and you finish on an up. But really, if it's the fans are the ones that tell us which songs we're supposed to be putting in the set.
Very cool. Is there a try to mix the set up a little bit as far as, obviously you guys have had some hits with Riptide and Going Down, and maybe do you guys try to mix those up as far as where they're going to appear during the show?
Yeah, definitely. You sort of mix around where you're playing, but if, for example, those songs that you just mentioned will always be in the set because every time we start that song, people go nuts. So we might sort of put it a little earlier or a little later, but basically, yeah, we have about maybe a 3 to 4 song wiggle room, maybe even just 2 or 3, but the rest of the songs are just, we play the people what they want to hear and we give them what they want.
Very cool, man. Now, you mentioned, obviously the album came out in June of 2013. And I remember an interview you did, last summer, you were talking about, you know, how you guys had basically a whole lot of songs and a lot of material to pick from. And instead of, you know, saying, hey, we're going to be this type of band or that kind of band, you're basically just trying to be the best band you can be. What is that process like? And are you looking forward to that process again when the time comes to sit down and record and kind of filter through, you know, maybe songs that didn't make it on this particular record?
I don't know. We're not really at that point yet, but I think we're probably not going to be revisiting old songs because I think we sort of worked under the mantra that if it wasn't good enough for the last record, why would it be good enough for the next one, you know?
Right.
So it's like you have to start again and make it better and better every time. I'm definitely not looking forward to the workload because writing 100 songs took a long time. And, you know, like, it'd be nice if we could just write 12 songs and they're all great and then the record's finished and we're done. But I think it really was, it kind of came from a place of, the only thing that we could all agree on was that the best songs should be on the record. Some people liked heavier songs, some people liked softer songs or whatever, but when that one song came up that everyone just went, oh, well, that's a great song, that was when we all sort of went, okay, well, we can at least agree on the good songs, so we'll just put the good songs on the record, and then all the other stuff that's just about, like, well, I like the riff or the solo or the drum part, we'll just forget about all that, we'll just let the songs be the working things.
Very cool. Well, I think you guys have, from Tripolar, obviously the album Connect, I mean, those two albums alone, I think speak volumes as far as, you know, just how successful you guys, and really the amount of effort you guys put into your lyrics and the arrangements, you know, drums, bass, vocals, the whole deal. So well done on both those records.
Oh, thank you very much, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, not a problem. Now, obviously, you know, we talk about, you know, heading on the tour with the Revolver tour and these other bands. Is there anything you take with you that kind of reminds you of home a little bit while you're on the road, if you're going to be gone for 6 weeks or, you know, 8 months or a year or whatever the case may be? Is there anything you kind of, you know, any little, like, token item or something you kind of take with you just to kind of...
I'm actually accumulating more and more of those as time goes on because I never like to let them go. Like, I have things from 7 years ago that come out with me on tour. But the latest one that I have is a Fillmore from Cars. You know that movie Cars?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, Fillmore, I have a little, my nephew gave me a little one of those, like a little toy, and he said, this is your van because you drive the hippie van, and that's the hippie van, and like, so I was like, okay, cool, and now I got to keep it in my pocket all the time while I'm on tour, which is great, but I got so much crap now, I got so many little, like, that's one of many things that I sort of bring up, and I have a photo board that I put up in my bunk and stuff, it's got all the pictures of home and everything like that, so... Yeah, you have your little trinkets and your things, yeah.
Very cool. But now, we've interviewed some other artists from Australia, and I've always asked a band called Heaven the Axe. I don't know if you're familiar with them from Australia or not, but we were talking with them about bogans. What is your interpretation of the word bogans in Australia?
I'm trying to think of the American translation right now. Oh, bogans is trailer trash rednecks. That's what a bogan is.
All right, that seems to be the synopsis of it all. So I don't know why I just felt the need to ask you that. I know it's kind of an odd question.
No, it's all right. It's all right. These are the hard-hitting, important questions. That's why we do
right. Well, I appreciate you taking the time and talking with us. Now, is there any advice that you would have for bands that are, you know, whether, you know, either in Australia or Germany or any other band that's in another country thinking about making that leap of faith and coming to the States and going to LA or New York or wherever they decide to go, you know, to try to make it in the industry? Is there any advice or, you know, anything that you would say to those bands at all?
Yeah, definitely learn everything you can about what you're doing is the main thing. I've worked with some people. I've worked with a lot of different types of people now, producers and bands and things like that. And the bands that, like I remember, Frank, I don't know why I'm using this example, but I just was watching something that had Frank Sinatra in it. Frank Sinatra knew how to play every instrument in the band that he would sing with, all the trumpets and trombones and all that sort of stuff and everything. And he could, he'd play with a 50-piece band, and he could hear when one player was playing one wrong note because he knew exactly what the hell was going on. And that meant, and that was why Frank Sinatra was Frank Sinatra. He was one of the greatest of all time. And if you have the knowledge of what you're doing, where someone says, oh, this has to be this way, and you can turn around and go, no, actually, I know what I'm doing, and you can't, like, you can't con me, and you can't, you know, charge me extra time, and I don't, you know, and people try to sort of take advantage to a degree, you know, a lot of young bands and whatever, there's a lot of people that would want to say, oh, I'll tell you how it is. But really, if you just learn how to make your music, you learn how to program, you know, on Pro Tools, because everyone's using the Pro Tools and software and stuff, you can make so much great music. And if you keep doing it, you can get anywhere you want to go, and you only need the people that you actually need, as opposed to the people that make you think that you need them. That's the advice. Well, sorry, that was long-winded, but yeah, that's the advice.
I say
know what the hell you're doing and don't get lazy is my main piece of advice.
No, I think that's good advice, and we've interviewed a lot of bands, and I always try to get everyone's take on, you know, advice and things they picked up along the way. Is there anyone, you know, when you came to the States, you guys have obviously played with a lot of different bands, you know, over the years. Is there anyone that's kind of offered you any advice at all? Like, hey, man, you know, this is kind of how it is, or, you know, has kind of, you know, friended you or kind of took you on your wing, so to speak? Yeah. Is there anyone out there that stands out?
Not really. I mean, yes. I mean, everyone has in their own way, but no one sort of, like, took me under their wing. I think the main thing that happens is you learn by example. You know, you see how singers treat their bodies. You see how people practice and rehearse. You see how they treat the fans. There's a lot of... And you just talk to a lot of people. Like, I learned a lot of... Mostly vocal technique stuff. Like, the biggest thing for singers on the road are... And I think that every person who is interested in singing, I've never met a singer that doesn't want to talk about singing, because it's a very refined craft. It's kind of an exclusive club. And when you're in it and you're trying to be a singer, you want to talk about it, and you want to share what you've learned, and you want to learn as much as you can about how to sustain your voice, how to hit the better notes, how to sound different. So I would just go and talk to every single singer, and I'd say, what's your warm-ups? What's your warm downs? What do you do in the show? What vocal teachers have you seen? How do you do this? How do you do that? And then whenever a new band comes up, I'll actually go and talk to the singer and say, hey, you know, we've got 5 shows in a row, and you're probably going to be burned out by the end if you keep doing what you're doing. Here's some, you know, here's my key, and here's, you know, some spray and little things that help you sort of make it through, and you help each other out.
Very cool. But now, is there certain things that you do? I mean, is there, you know, a certain approach?
I do everything. I'm a militant about the way that I use my voice. And I learned one of the most valuable lessons about breathing and air control, which I tell everyone now. I'll actually sit down and I'll teach them how to breathe a certain way so that they don't hurt their voice. But most of it just has to do with, it's like when you're on the road, you don't eat regular, you don't sleep regular, and you don't get a lot of exercise outside of the shows unless you really are disciplined. So you have to be overly disciplined to eat really good food as often as you can, and drink a lot of water, and all the boring stuff, just so boring. Like the stuff you would do if you were working 9 to 5, you would use the opportunity to go to the water cooler or to go and get lunch. When you're on tour, you're moving around all the time, you can't do it. So your body kind of wears down. And it's like if you woke up first thing in the morning after not having enough sleep and having a few drinks the night before, and you had to go and do a 5-mile run, you couldn't do it. So why would you expect to be able to sing in our show?
Right.
You know? So it just makes sense. And it's just getting back to the basics of the fact that your vocal cord is the most fragile muscle in the entire body, and you have to use it for an hour every night, night after night. It's insane. You know, that's why singers need to talk to each other, because it's something that no one else can really understand, and we really do sort of help. I mean, Brent from Shinedown taught me stacks of stuff, and we would sing on stage and breathing, and he showed me how to do it, and I was a much better singer by the end of the tour.
Well, I think also as a singer is also realizing that you can't push it too much on a show too, because you're not just doing that one show or that one week. You're going to be on the road for 6 months or a year. So you have to kind of pace your voice too and train it just like any other muscle.
Absolutely. That's exactly what you got to do.
Well, cool, man. One more question for you. I know, obviously you're a busy guy, recording and touring, all these things. Do you have any hobbies or anything? When you say you're done with touring and you're not recording, is there something you kind of let, take a step back in your free time and just kind of.
Yeah. I don't really have any hobbies that are like busy work. I write a lot. I actually find writing songs that are not like Sick Puppies, or writing like movies, and stuff like that, and that sort of gets me out of it. But I find if I'm not doing something or creating something, some type of thing, after a few days I get kind of stir-crazy and weird. So usually if I was to get a hobby, it would just distract me from writing, and I think it's better to just write something and create something, because then you got something to show for it than a whole bunch of lost time.
Well said, man. I know we're pushing the time limit here, but I always ask, instead of, finding out why you guys picked your name, do you remember names that you didn't pick for the band name?
Oh, yeah. Sweet Mercury. And what was the other one? Oh, yeah. Stone Tully. I don't know what the hell we were thinking. Sick Puppies is just a stroke of genius.
Right. Well done, man. Well, hey, Shim, hopefully I get to see you here in a couple weeks at the show in Kentucky, man. Again, I appreciate your time, and best of luck on the road, man. Hopefully I'll see you on the way, man.
Thanks a lot, man. I'll see you out there. Take care of yourself. I had a plan and it made God laugh. It didn't work, should have checked the map. I hit the wall because I lived too fast. I didn't know it could have that bad. I clung to hope when there was none. I should have known that was so dumb.
Slowly.
There's No Going Back, Sick Puppies here on Revelator. And again, thanks to Sick Puppies and Shim for stopping by, talking about the tour, which is currently going on right now. So definitely look up information at Sick Puppies' website, or, you know, the Revolver Hottest Women of Rock Tour. Find out whether or not that show is coming to a town near you. And for more information about this particular episode of Revelator, head on over to omnes.tv. Again, that's omnes.tv. Click on episode number 47. And find us on Facebook as well, facebook.com/omnes.tv. Again, that's omnes.tv. You can also find me, Ryan, on Twitter, Ryan_unsigned. I'm on there pretty frequently. But, you know, we haven't talked a whole lot of NBA. Last week we touched on the All-Star break. And I'll talk about the All-Star break, you know, this past weekend. And we'll talk playoffs and the trade deadline and all those different things. Not a whole lot in the trade deadline, but All-Star weekend, Friday night. Yeah, you know, you have the young guys playing. Dion Waiters from the Cavaliers looked really, really good. I'm like, man, you know, where's he been all year? You know, just kind of waking up a little bit. Then, you know, Saturday night, you have the 3-point shootout. Man, the 3-point shootout's not what it used to be. You don't have as many great shooters like you used to, but Marco Bellinelli, the guy's been in the league a long time, played in the Euro League in Spain. Really, I'm kind of glad to see him win. Really, really solid guy. He's been in the league a long time. Really, just a true pro. Ended up winning it. Shot the ball very, very well. Once he got warmed up, he was on fire. Really the only guy who made a nice showing. The dunk contest format this year. Look, I like some of the guys they had in the dunk contest, and some of the dunks were pretty good. But the format was awful. I mean, awful. You know, I'm an old school dude. I remember, you know, watching Michael Jordan and Dominique Wilkins and those, you know, dunk offs. And, you know, I remember Kobe being him and Vince Carter and Isaiah Ryder, you know, those guys doing those dunks in one take. And that one of the things that I think that made that John Wall dunk ended up being the dunker of the night, however that new format was. But that dunk he did, well, not only the difficulty, he did it in one take. I mean, it happened so fast. You're so used to like, oh, he's not going to be able to do it. You know, most of those guys don't do it in one take. He just ran up, grabbed the ball out of dude's hands, dunked it between his legs, came around the other side of the rim and dunked it. One take. That's how it's done. Right there. You know, it happened so fast. You're like, oh my God, did I just see that? Did he just do that in one take? Yes. That's how it's supposed to be. Now, Paul George had a reverse 360 between the legs, like the reverse Isaiah Ryder dunk with the opposite hand. Now, he didn't do it in one take. He did do it in a second try, which I don't have a problem with, because back in the day, you'd get one redo. Now, you know, you get as many tries as you want in like 90 seconds or something. I don't like that format. If they're going to do it, just go up and do it, you know? This is why you need Blake Griffin and LeBron and those guys. There's got to be enough money or charity or something to get these guys involved. Make, you know, it's already for charity anyway, the model of the money. You know, they raised like $500,000 the event Saturday night for charity. So why not? You know, I mean, these guys got deep pockets, man. You know, let's get these guys together and get some money together to get these guys put a big show on Saturday night. Now, obviously, the main show is the game on Sunday, which was man, if offense is your thing for basketball, Sunday, that All-Star game was for you. I mean, guys were lighting it up, alley-oop dunks, three. I mean, they scored. It was 155 to 164 at the end of the game. Okay? Some serious scoring going on. At points, there was some, you know, it looked like a layup line a little bit, but these guys broke records for three-pointers and a half, points and a half, you know, field goals made and a half. Kyrie Irving from the Cavaliers ends up winning MVP with 14 assists and 31 points. Carmelo Anthony set a record with, like, 8 three-pointers in the game. Kyrie Irving set a record scoring 24 points and a half, the most by any player. Blake Griffin almost broke Wilt Chamberlain's single scoring record in All-Star game of 42 points. He had 38. If the West would have won, I mean, Kevin Durant, I mean, LeBron James, everybody was absolutely stellar. Everyone, you know, the stars came out, and it was a very, very entertaining game to watch. What you would expect from an All-Star game, when you look at Major League Baseball and you look at the Pro Bowl and the NFL, you go, well, you guys don't have it. You guys have it way wrong. You know, the NBA has the best All-Star game, hands down. It's very entertaining and fun to watch, and probably because of just the way the game is. But moving into the playoff push here, there's a couple of moves being made. Indiana acquiring Evan Turner and getting rid of Danny Granger after 9 years in Indy. That's an interesting move for them. And a couple of minor moves here and there. Nothing really major through the trade deadline. A lot of picks moving around, that type of thing. But look, the East is Indiana, Miami, the West. Gosh, you have no idea who's going to come out of there. It's hard to say. The Olympics are still going on. That's been pretty interesting stuff. Sochi is Whew, man. So she's been a little weird and awkward, but yeah, if you follow me on Twitter, you know I'm like curling, and I figure this is the best thing. This is actually for one of our listeners. So, Carla, thanks for this. And check this out. This is our 2014 Olympic update.
Our planet, the Earth, as we know it, is unique. It contains life even in its most barren stretches. It's rich with oddities. In all my years of exploration, these are the creatures I find most curious. For the first time ever, filmed over the course of three afternoons in deepest Russia, using the world's most state-of-the-art cameras, this is Curl. Here we have a pack of sliding curlers. Watch as the alpha female displays her dominance over the herd by tapping the end of the frisking broom to check for rogue insects. This is a precise exercise. And off she goes, gently but flamboyantly launching the oversized walnut down the frozen river. The alpha female's job is now complete. It's down to the herd to frantically follow the walnut down the river, gently frisking the foreground. Past the red line, the walnut goes. This is nature at its most vulnerable. You'll notice a group of other walnuts already near the flat, round nest. These are from other sliding curlers who had thrust their nuts down earlier. This is to mark their territory. The aim of this ritual is to land your walnut in the center of the nest. The frisking is frantic and often futile, making no difference to the success of the net thrust. But it's playful, and all part of what makes this game the sliding curlers play so magical. Look how happy it makes them.
Very nice, very nice. There it goes, back into nature's where it's most vulnerable. Very nice. Pushing the walnut down the frozen river, past the red line. Pushing on your nuts. Well done, well done. Hey, that's all I've got for you this particular episode of Revelator. Mike, wonderful job as always. Special thanks to Shim from the Sick Puppies for donating some time to us as well. Next week, we have the fabulous Miss Wendy will be on the show. She's been on, if that name sounds familiar, she's been on tour with Slash and UFO, Quiet Riot, and some other bands as well. Going to be a very, very fun show, so definitely check that out. Hey, it seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody.
This was episode 47, Shacking Up with Sick Puppies. For show notes or links to topics discussed on this episode of Revelator, or to experience previous episodes, head on over to omnes.tv, that's omnes.tv, and click on Revelator. Thanks for listening.